Welcome to the final day of this series, in which we are investigating together the nature of what Krishnamurti simply called what is, which could also be called the living truth of the eternally present now, or non-duality reality. Call it what you will. The truth of life expressing now, along with pure awareness in the eternally present now, is one truth, not many, that includes, but is not limited to, the organic material universe expressing now, as well as, in the case of human beings, the processes of mind, which interprets that which appears in conceptualized terms, which then also brings about psychological suffering in humankind, as well as the presence of love and peace, along with pure perception of what is, that can be present in conscious awareness when the mind is still. All of this is a mouthful to be sure, but this is a rough outline of what we're looking into here. Identification with the content of mind is a significant evolutionary problem that is currently working itself out within humankind in the eternally present now. Since the advent of the human brain that brings into play objects that appear in consciousness created of mind, human beings have become increasingly mesmerized by the arising of concepts and thoughts, to the exclusion of living truth in the eternally present now. So this is what we are investigating today. What does it mean to live as an enlightened human being, unidentified with, and thereby unattached to, the content of mind? The last time we met, we inquired into the nature of true freedom, what Krishnamurti called freedom from the known. Today, we are inquiring into the nature of this same reality, only now we are giving it a different name, enlightened being, which is to be free from attachments to the content of mind, and thereby be free from the known. Being free from the known is to live as enlightened being. So when we speak of non-dual truth or non-dual reality, we are pointing to inner freedom from the content of mind, as well as enlightened being, because the reality of the presence of this here now, for which we use different words, is essentially one and the same. Enlightened being is realized when deep-seated constructs of mind that bring into being a false sense of separateness, together with a false sense of a separate entity called the egoic self, and the contradictions and conflicts that attachment to this mental state of being bring about, when such attachments to the content of mind let go and ultimately collapse into the eternally present now. And to the degree that this is so, the reality of the presence of pure awareness and inner light and love and peace come into the foreground of conscious being as one goes about daily life. To this end, there is a transformative process occurring within us now that burns away the dross, a process that ultimately unveils the truth of what is, that is occurring now within a vast silent space wherein there is total freedom from the known, and one lives as an enlightened being. So our inquiry today is, what is the nature of enlightened being? Excuse me. But before we begin, excuse me, with Krishnamurti's words, it's worth reiterating what we have said many times before, that the true nature of enlightened being is not found within a time-bound state of mind. Concepts are a product of mind, and focusing attention onto concepts as they arise limits one's overall view to concepts and thoughts. Whereas enlightened being is not limited to concepts and thoughts, but is limitless and thereby open to all possibilities in the eternally present now, without limitations of mind coming into play. This is also where true learning occurs, which is always fresh and new. It's also worth reiterating that when we speak of the limitations of mind, we are pointing to an aspect of the totality of being. As human beings, just as when we point to the nature of enlightened being, we are pointing to an aspect of the totality of being as human beings, all of which expresses in the eternally present now in its many and varied ways. In and through us, both consciously and unconsciously, as one whole integrated movement of being, inclusive of all appearances as conceived of mind that come and go, as well as pure awareness of what is, which always remains everywhere at once, at all times, untouched and unmoved by the content of mind. Nothing that appears, whether consciously or unconsciously, is separate from the overall movement of life, appearing, unfolding, disappearing, and reappearing in the eternally present now, whether we are consciously aware of this fact or not. So even though it might seem as if humans are endowed with a unique capacity to consciously approach the one life expressing now from the standpoint of mind, with the hope of integrating into a wholeness of being that is conceived to be separate from us now, but is a place imagined of mind to which we aspire, the fact is there is only one life appearing now, transforming and evolving now, not many. And this one life includes all that appears in any given moment of time, including, in the case of human beings, anxiety, anger, and fear, as well as excitement and jubilation, along with moments of empathy and compassion. Love, joy, beauty, and peace that come into the foreground of conscious being when limitations of mind are not in play. All of these states of being, one might say, that include the highs and lows and the in-betweens, along with peace, beauty, and joy that lies beyond are aspects of the one life appearing now, whether we are conscious of this fact or not. So the question becomes, how do we understand this process that is unfolding and evolving both within and without, whether we realize it or not? This process that equates to the totality of the material expression, as well as the totality of conscious being expressing now within the stillness of pure awareness that is inconceivable from the standpoint of mind. As Ralph once said, this is a big bone to chew, which is true. But only if it's chewed from the standpoint of mind. So instead of chewing from the standpoint of mind, if we simply let go and thereby allow the transformative process to evolve and unfold as it will, while giving full attention to what is in the eternally present now, the meat on the bone will disappear of its own accord. And what remains in its stead is enlightened being in the here and now, absent the limitations of mind in play. So, this said, let's now listen to what Krishnamurti had to say about the nature of enlightened being. In his diary, Krishnamurti once described the presence of love and peace as he experienced it in this way. For 2 or 3 weeks, there has been this sense of heightened peace and stillness. The mind, intensely aware without any image, thought, or emotion, but a love and a tenderness that was almost overpowering. There was no sense of meditative consciousness not being there, but the other, the immense reality, this that has no name, penetrated and simply was. There was this silent intensity of being, and in this intensity, there is only being, and an ever-increasing silence and immensity. So the question becomes, this is me talking now, how does this way of being immersed in the silent intensity of love and peace, as Krishnamurti put it, become our way of being, our way of life? How does one not only awaken unto the truth of what is, but also be immersed in the truth of pure awareness and immense silence in the eternally present now? Knowing there is no formula nor anything one can do to bring the silence and presence of pure awareness into the foreground of conscious being, Krishnamurti approached this question during one of his talks in this way. I wonder if you realize that when we are seeking, we are searching for something permanent. Permanent within the context of time. Something enduring and everlasting. We notice that everything around us is transient, in a state of flux, is born, withers, and dies. So we've searched to establish something that will endure in the field of the known. But the known only exists by means of thought, which is also memory. And thoughts come and go like the wind. So if I recognize this, and I move to find out how to end thinking, what am I to do? Surely I must become aware of the whole process of thinking, right? I must ultimately see that every thought, however subtle, however lofty, or however ignoble or stupid, has its roots in the known, which is memory. If I see this very clearly, then the mind, when confronted with this immensely deep-rooted problem, is capable of acknowledging that I do not know, because the mind is incapable of finding answers to this inquiry. Scott Killeby, we've spoken of before, author of Reflections of the One Life, Daily Pointers to Enlightenment, uses a different term to point to the nature of inquiry. Noticing, he says, which is the word Scott uses, has a totally different quality than seeking or searching. It takes no time at all. Noticing is present seeing and what is of what is actually here now. What is here now is timeless, aware space in which everything is happening. Thoughts, emotions, experiences, states, and situations. And this aware space sees the conceptualized you, searching for a concept called enlightenment that hopefully occurs within another concept called the future. In this way, the sense of time arises in this timeless space, which is another way of saying that mind arises in this timeless space. So what is enlightenment if it is not a concept? Is it real? Scott categorically says, yes, enlightenment is the present recognition that your true identity is this aware space within which thoughts arise, not the thoughts that arise, but the space within which thoughts arise. And recognition of this fact is enlightenment. Krishnamurti spoke of this space in this way. Is there space in your mind? Or is your mind so crowded that there is no space in it at all? If your mind has space, then in that space there is silence. And from that silence, everything else comes. And you listen and pay attention without resistance. This is why it's very important to have space in the mind. If the mind is not overcrowded, not ceaselessly occupied, then it can listen to the dog barking, to the sound of a train crossing a distant bridge, and at the same time be fully aware of what is being said by a person talking here, without interpreting, without analyzing, without judging that which is perceived or being said. A still mind is not seeking any form of experience. It is simply still, without movement from past memory or experience, and therefore is free of the known. Then one can perceive the movement of the unknown without distortion. A seeing that is not translatable, that cannot be put into words, a movement that can be both intense and immense, a movement that is timeless because it is not created of mind, nor is there a sense of space or anything to experience or gain or achieve. This movement from beginning to end is the way of meditation. And the way of meditation is the way of enlightened being. Truth and understanding comes in a flash, and that flash has no continuity. It is not within the field of time, which is mind. You must see this for yourself. Truth is fresh, instantaneous. It is not the continuity of something that has already been. What has been does not bring understanding. As long as one is seeking a continuity of being, wanting permanency in life, in relationship, or love, or is longing to be enlightened, or to find everlasting peace, one is pursuing something that is within the field of time and therefore is not timeless, is not beyond the field of time. He alone shall know truth who is not seeking, not striving, not trying to achieve a result. Truth is not continuous. Truth has no abiding place. It is seen from moment to moment. Truth is always new, therefore timeless. If you seek to find truth, what you will find will be a self-projection, an idea. It will be what you desire it to be, and the creation of desire is not truth. Truth cannot be acquired or accumulated. Knowledge is accumulated. To perceive truth requires the understanding of the false. Without the ending of the cause of ignorance, there cannot be enlightenment. And seeking enlightenment when the mind is unenlightened is utterly meaningless. What is important is that we understand the workings of self. If you and I as individuals, not as a group, belonging to certain classes, certain societies, certain organizations, but as individuals, can understand the true nature of self, then there is a real revolution. But the moment a revolutionary ideal, as projected of mind, becomes organized, then the self takes shelter in that idea. It cloaks itself in that idea. But if you and I, as individuals, can love and harmoniously relate in everyday life, then this revolution that is so essential will come into being. What I mean by the self, this is Krishnamurti continuing. What I mean by the self are ideas created of mind to which one becomes attached. And the memory, the conclusions, and the various forms of intentions to endeavor to be or not to be this or that. The accumulated memory, the arbitrary segregation into clans and racial groups, and all the rest of it, whether it be projected outwardly in action or conceived inwardly as virtue. The striving after all this, separation and segregation, and the finding of differences make up what we think of as the self. This whole endeavor created of mind is the self. We know all this intellectually, if not wholeheartedly, do we not? And we also know that the extraordinary moments when the self is not there, in which there is no sense of endeavor or effort that occurs when love is present. When you and I as individuals come in to see and understand the whole workings of the self, of how the self comes into being and draws our attention, then we shall know what love is. Love is not the self. Self does not recognize love. Excuse me again. I want to repeat that sentence. These are Krishnamurti's words. Self does not recognize love. Everything about us, within as well as without, our relationships, our thoughts, our feelings, is impermanent. Therefore, is in a state of constant flux. Being aware of this, the mind craves permanency. It wants to permanently know. It wants to be in a perpetual state of peace, a perpetual state of love, of goodness, of security that neither time nor events can destroy. So mind creates the idea of the soul, the Atman, and visions of a permanent paradise. But this permanency is born of impermanency, and so it has within it the seeds of impermanence. But there is only one fact, and that fact is impermanence. Love cannot be cultivated. Love cannot be divided into physical and divine. Love is love. Not that you love many or the one. A flower that exudes perfume is not concerned with who smells it or who turns his back on it. So also is love. Love is not a memory. Love is not a thing of mind or of the intellect. Love comes into being naturally as compassion. When the whole problem of existence, of fear, greed, envy, despair, and hope has been understood and resolved. Love implies great freedom, not to do whatever you like, but freedom from attachments to concepts of mind. Love comes only when the mind is quiet, disinterested, not focused on itself. Without love, your problems increase. But with love, do what you will, there is no conflict. And absent conflict, one then realizes the beauty of love and of truth.